Hello everyone, thanks for coming to the session today. My name is Stephen Nesbitt. I'm a technical solutions professional for business productivity in the UK. And really this session is about, as it says on the screen, understanding Office for Mac, coming from a Windows perspective. And obviously, you know, a lot of the people here, I'm sure, are know Mac very well, but have, you know, spent, like myself, most of their career in Windows and obviously the Office products associated there. My role in the UK is very much as a sort of part of the technical pre-sales team. So I spend most of my time talking to large organizations about unblocking technical challenges. But more and more, we get into sessions with business decision makers and people who, you know, are very senior within you know, outside of IT. And a lot of the time, those guys have a Mac. And they tend to be, I see some nodding heads there. And it seems to me that although the majority of my accounts, it's fair to say, are, you know, predominantly Windows with Office based, and you know, that's the background I come from. Within a lot of these organizations, a lot of the senior executives, and often cases a lot of the what we may call value generators of those particular companies, i.e. the guys who create the IP or maybe the guys who are creating the marketing collateral and things like that, are running Macs. And so I think it's important that we as a Windows Office group also understand the Mac side as well. And today's objectives kind of follow that theme. So this is a level 200 session around Office for Mac, starting right at the beginning and basically introducing the concepts that you would need to know in order to introduce Office for Mac into your organization, or perhaps move from Office for Mac 2011 to 2016. So we're going to start with an overview of Office for Mac, and then we're going to move quickly on to understanding the deployment packages that are available for Office for Mac, and then move on to deploying that, installing, same thing really, I suppose, and updating those packages as you move forward. And finally, I'm also keen to start to help people here connect to the wider community for Mac administrators for Office, and also the resources in Microsoft that are able to assist with technical and other challenges as you roll Office for Mac out to your organizations. So we'll start with a brief overview of some of the new capabilities in Office for Mac. And we'll start with a kind of like a very nice marketing slide of why you would consider it as a platform. Well, as I've said, in a lot of organizations, the more senior people within the organization come to the IT team with a Mac and say, you know, make this work, this is what I want to use. And that's fair enough. And I think it's fair to say now that with Office for Mac 2016, we're bridging the gap between the experience that's available on a PC to that which is available on a Mac. So the taglines are, it's familiar, it's compatible and professional. It's optimized and developed from the ground up to work to run on a Mac. And crucially, it's cloud connected. And a lot of what we'll talk about today is managing Office for Mac when you're running an Office 365 environment. And you're managing your identity and other parts of your authentication methods through Office 365. Finally, it's enterprise ready. It's scalable, it's secure, and it's updatable at a cadence, which means that you can get those updates into your organizations very quickly. Crucially, I think one of the things that I like to think, you know, like to consider here is the Mac is just one other endpoint in the family of Office. Gone are the days where we just considered Office on PC. We're now talking about Office on Macs, on iPads, on Android phones, across all manner of devices, big or small. And really, while all these experiences are technically, in some ways, quite separate, they have their own development teams, etc., we don't want to penalize anyone for their choice of device. We want them to feel comfortable moving across those different platforms. And really, because you can license your Mac Invest or your Office for Mac products via Office 365, they form part of that 5x5x5 licensing that you have for each of your users for Office when you take up an Office 365 Enterprise license, which means that you can license your users for a PC, a Mac, two other PCs, and then have the enterprise rights for mobile devices as well. Quick show of hands here. How many people regularly use office on a mobile device, say an iPad or smaller. Okay, so it's starting to be more and more. And we've seen with new devices like the iPad Pro, you know, we're starting to see that shift more and more towards that kind of result. So crucially, we do think it's the best in value of investment, and also it's up to date. It gives you any time access to your data on a platform that supports you. So we're just going to take a little bit of a quick look at some of the features of Office 2016 for Mac, because I think it's worth setting the scene around what this actually looks like from a user experience. A couple of the other points on the slide here are really around, you know, moving us more into the deployment conversation. But it is true that we are developing this application on via the sandbox guidelines from Apple. And you can install Office for Mac on a Mac that has 2011 running on there as well. So 2016 and 2011 running side by side. And that can be useful for user training and app compatibility reasons. So if I just end my... I keep pressing the screen and it isn't a touch screen. It's driving me crazy. If I just end my slideshow for a second, I will actually just break into... Let me see if I can make this a bit bigger. So this is the presentation I'm obviously giving you now in Office for Mac. And I authored most of this presentation, if I'm honest, on my Surface, and then transferred it across. I know it's terrible, but I did. And then transferred it across to my Mac. However, what struck me straight away was actually, aside from a slight difference in fonts, there really was no difference. You know, everything came across, all of the templates that I used, all the images, everything was sized correctly. So moving between the platforms was really seamless from that regard. And working with PowerPoint in this case, it was also really, really helpful, useful in that face. Now, what I've got here is if I go into the backstage of this device, and it's extremely small on here, I'm afraid, but ultimately, I've got my connected accounts, and hopefully you can see that, where Katie, who's my demo user here, is connected directly to her OneDrive for Business and her SharePoint via her identity that she's signed in for Office. And this is a great example of how, you know, I can start work on a presentation here, but also move to another device and have those updates follow me across because it's stored in the cloud and I can get access to that, that PowerPoint deck from multiple different devices. Let me just shut that out for a second. Close that down. Figure out how to get out of this, bear with me. See, this is where you start to think, I wish I knew exactly what the things did. Come back to that in a second. It's all right, it's okay. So Office for Mac really is giving us a really world-class user experience on the Mac device. And, it looks great. I've not seen it on one of the newer the Macs, to be honest, but I'm sure with the standard of the screens that it looks absolutely fantastic. One of the new clients and things that we want to be aware of as well is we have actually, as well as the standard applications such as, you know, Excel, PowerPoint, Word, etc., we do also have Skype for Business, which has just been announced this week at Ignite. And this replaces the Link 2011 client, which has obviously been, to be fair, lagging a little bit behind with the functionality of Skype for Business on the Office for Windows. So it's been redesigned from a ground up. I'm not going to cover it in detail today, and that's simply because of the fact that it's actually a theatre session with Jeremy Chapman and Pravin there, actually shows you this working, as well as updates to the iOS devices for Skype for Business as well. So if you can spare 20 minutes to go and check that out on the Ignite website, I would do, because it's definitely something that's going to be a big feature moving forward. So we've looked very briefly at the actual Office for Mac client and what it looks like from a PowerPoint perspective. But now I want to move on to the actual packages and how we actually configure and install this for use within the organization, which, to be fair, is the lion's share of why we're here today. And there are a couple of different ways that we can do that. Just... So the first way of looking at this is looking at a deployment package which we're going to call SKU-less. And by SKU-less, we mean it's not really tied to any particular device or any particular licensing SKU, which means that you can take these packages, you can get them straight from the web address that's on the URL that's on the screen there, and you can bring those down into your organization. And then you can look at actually how you license those for your enterprise. So you can see here that we've got a couple of different packages that's available. First of all, we have the Suite installer, which as things stand today, and I'm sure may change with Skype for Business rolling into the product, as I discussed a moment ago, we have the Outlook, PowerPoint, Excel, Word, and OneNote clients available within that Suite installer. We then also have standalone installers for the products there, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook. But if you want OneNote on its own, that's actually available from the actual App Store itself. Now, the little clock icon relates to something called Microsoft Auto Update, and that's included within the packages, obviously, apart from the OneNote package. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit more detail in a while, but really what it is what it sounds like. It's how we keep Mac up to date with by bringing down the available builds that have been published by the engineering team. So if you're going to use this type of package, you've really got two options. You can either download the Suite installer and use what's known as a choice XML to customize exactly which applications from that Suite installer are deployed. Or you can download the standalone installers and deploy them as you see fit. And finally, you can download OneNote from the actual Mac App Store itself. Now, moving on from that, the second option is then the volume licensing option for the packages. So this is a different approach to getting hold of the actual media that make up the applications. And this is tied to your volume licensing agreement with Microsoft. Quick show of hands, how many of you have worked for a company with an enterprise agreement? Right. So this is all you guys, right? So basically everybody here who has an enterprise agreement has access to what's called the Volume Licensing Center. And this is where you can get those packages from. Now, as you can see, there's a few notable changes on the slide, but ultimately the Suite installer is very, very similar. We have the same five applications, again, with potentially Skype for Business moving into there. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm sure they'll tell me at some point. And then the standalone installers for those applications. You may note that there's no OneNote standalone package, so the only way to deploy OneNote from the Volume Licensing Center is to actually download and deploy the Suite. Now, what else is important to notice here is, although we have the Microsoft Auto Update deployed within this suite, we also have a little key icon. And that key icon stands for the serializer, the serialized package. And ultimately, this is how we tie your copy of Office for Mac to the device where it resides. And this is done in an automatic process, and it's how we license, we ensure that the deployment in your organization is tied back to your volume licensing agreement. Okay, so we've gone from no licensing at deployment to automatic licensing at deployment. Okay, make sense? Looking for some, yeah, okay. Nobody screamed no, so that's good. We also have a difference in format here, away from a PKG file into an ISO format. Okay, so there are a few differences between those two packages, but fundamentally, the actual media, the application itself, is exactly the same. Okay, so it's the same product, the same builds, just distributed in a slightly different way. Now, one of the issues with the approach of a non-licensed package is that it led to some behaviors that are not really supported via Mac admins, particularly with the 2011 builds. And that was creating what's known as a plist file, which basically is a preferences file which ties which is created when you license the Office for Mac application, and copying it from one device to another. And so in order to avoid that, we've actually started packaging along with the volume licensing builds something called a volume licensing serializer. And what this enables you to do is to basically tie a deployment that has been done from the PKG files, so a SKU-less deployment, and tie that into a licensing agreement. It's also used to regenerate keys for previously serialized deployments as well. And it was built primarily, or at least in part at least, to stop people from the necessity of moving, of basically licensing their Mac environment by copying the plist from one app, from one computer to another. So these are included within the VL ISO packages from 15.17, and basically includes an app, which we refer to as MOSA, but is the Microsoft Office Setup Assistant. And what it basically does is it takes the key that has been generated and maps it against the serial number of the hard disk of the device, and basically that's how it creates that that unique pairing between the application and the device that it's running on. I'll get into the copying of plist and why we don't support that a little bit later on, but ultimately, regardless of the way that you deploy your actual media, whether you get it from the store, from the website there, whether you get it from the volume licensing center, we can tie it to an enterprise agreement by using this application. So we talked a little bit there about Microsoft Auto Update, which is referred to as MAU, but I struggle to say that, so I'll probably carry on saying Microsoft Auto Update. And it's really something that is built into the deployment of these builds when you put them in and you do them for initial install. And it's used, as you might expect, to check if a newer version of the software is available. It is optional. You don't have to use it. It can be disabled. But if you disable Microsoft Auto Update, Office will not update, obviously, and you're responsible as an admin for actually pushing those builds out to the user base. Now, coming from a world of Office 365 Pro Plus, that's often what people do, right? We're kind of used to that idea that, you know, they don't want the applications to just continually update themselves on a monthly cadence without, you know, some sort of validation from the admins. But in the Mac world, it very much seems like the Microsoft Auto Update is the preferred method for updating and keeping your applications current. Remember that this technology has to scale from consumer right up to enterprise. But we do offer the ability, obviously, not to use it, but it's something that the engineering team work hard on to make sure it's extremely reliable and also continually supports new features, more of which we'll go into a little bit later on in the presentation. So what's actually in these installer packages? Well, it's kind of there on the screen. As you can see, in the first kind of reaction that we normally get is, well, they're quite big. And you'd be quite right in saying that they are. And some of that is to do with, obviously, the application itself. But the sandbox guidelines that have been introduced within 2016 have now meant that effectively we can't share resources between applications as we would have done in the 2011 builds. So what that's basically meant is that each of the applications basically contains everything it needs to function on its own, even though it's been downloaded as a suite, potentially. And those in the red boxes there are some examples of services that probably would have been shared normally, which are now included within every single app package. And so when we look at this as an overall installer package, we're looking at something that's round about 3 gigabytes in size. And that's obviously not particularly light on its feet, and so something that we wanted to reduce. And so what we've actually done is we've taken those frameworks, fonts, and proofing tools and actually separated them into another package, which is re-injected at install time, which means that the actual downloads of the primary app binaries, etc., are separate from those. And so the whole package weighs in at about 1.5 gig by doing that. This is particularly important when we get to updates a little bit later on, when we look at both combo and delta updates and how we keep, minimize the amount of traffic that's coming down your pipe in order to keep things up to date. So one of the new things that's worth considering as well is this move to 64-bit Office for Mac. So I don't know if, quick show of hands again, is anyone running the 64-bit version? Okay, one or two. So this was a change that was articulated back in April this year, that effectively from September, so now, we would be moving Office from a 32-bit structure into a Office 16 into a 64-bit Office version. And the reason for that are primarily performance-based. You know, delivering faster load times, as it says on there. Now, officially, the guidelines are that for most users, this will not be a noticeable change. But if you do have application compatibility issues, then obviously please reach out to us, and we can also issue you with guidance around areas where we found known issues between add-ins and macros, etc., that have been pulled into that have caused an issue between 32-bit and 64-bit Mac. Now, the challenge of this is that there is really no going back from this step. So there was a one-time 32-bit final build, if you like, delivered, which obviously you can still get hold of and deploy. But ultimately, Microsoft Auto Update, plus the builds that have been published moving forward, are 64-bit. And as it says on here, they're going to be auto-targeted by Microsoft Update. And so that's just something to be aware of as you look to keep your deployment up to date, that we are moving to this 64-bit architecture. Has anyone here who's gone to 64-bit had any issues? Well, look at that, blimey. Oh, okay, one. So WebEx, did you say, with some issue, but they updated. Excellent, okay. I don't want to say what have been the answer to that question if we'd have done it. I'll not say that. but that's really good to see, and really kind of validates what the engineering team have done and worked very hard on. But if we've got a few, you know, like I say, if you do have issues, then please reach out to us, and we can provide you with known issues, as potentially that may have now been made the list. So just going to stop there for a second and just ask, does anyone have any questions about the part we've covered so far? So that's either really boring or I've done a really good job. I don't know which one it is. Okay, well, we'll see. We'll keep going then. Great. So that first part was really around, you know, what are the packages? What's actually available when, you know, for you to install and in various different ways of actually pulling that together and getting it on your machines. Now, deployment and installation is quite different from an Office 365 Pro Plus on Windows and an Office for Mac 2016 point of view. For a start, there is no click to run. And believe it or not, that is a big misconception that we see a lot within organizations, that they want to use the same click to run technology for Office for Windows for their Mac deployment. Unfortunately, that option does not exist. We also don't have the ability to package languages in the same way that we do with Office on Windows, which is, you know, basically at the time using the Office deployment tool, we can basically customize the XML to pull down particular language types and then push those out to distribution points or directly to the machines. Basically, all the language support is baked into those builds that we talked about before, and that's one of the reasons for the size of those. Up on the screen here, you can see some minimum requirements for the actual operating system that's running on the Mac. And one of the things that's important to note as well is that the apps are sandboxed and code sealed, and there is limited installation customization available. Okay, one of the things that we'll get to in a little while is around non-supported practices, and we're kind of going to touch on these as we go through, is tinkering around too much with the package build. This was apparently rife, if you want to call it that way, within the 2011 world, and now we're assured that this is a very bad idea. So basically, we were encouraging people as best practice to deploy the packages as is. And as I said right at the top of this, they are designed for side-by-side installation. I'm reliably informed that effectively the 2011 and 2016 applications don't really know each other are there on the same OS. And so if you do have app compatibility, user training, requirements, you can run them side by side very effectively. Now, when we talk about actually deploying the applications, and we talked before about the packages available, but deploying them, we have a few options. First of all, we have manual install. Well, obviously, you know, we can install it manually if we like. We also have the option to go to the Office 365 portal and install it directly from there. So those of you who are, and I'm not going to risk jumping in and out of my screen again, but those of you who are aware of the Office 365 app launcher, if you click on your profile picture up there and go to install, you can see the number of installs that you have for your Office subscription. And installs on your Mac devices will just simply count against those. So at the moment for mine, I'm actually, my demo user Katie, I'm actually up to 5. This particular Mac here was the 5th. And so I'm going to have to go and deinstall some VMs and actually start to clean that up. But ultimately, that's another way that you can get users install that as well. We also work with SSH, ARD, Apple Remote Desktop, and there are a multitude of third-party providers that allow you to deploy and configure your Mac install across your environment. Now, I am not an expert on these technologies, but the most popular ones are pretty much on the screen, which is Casper, Monkey, that most people are using in order to manage this. They're not our applications, ultimately, within Microsoft. We don't have experts, if you like, within the field, within Microsoft to deal with those. But what we do have is a very, very active community with admins who do use those technologies feeding back into our product group. And the application platform experience team within Microsoft are very, very active in that community. And so if you do have challenges or things you want to discuss and touch on around that, then please, you know, as part of that, and I'll reiterate this at the end with the community slide, then please come back to us on that. So I talked about non-supported practices, and we've kind of covered most of these already, but ultimately these are some of the things that we don't want to see happen. The first one being changes to the app package. As we've said, this was something that happened a lot in the 2011 days, but is something that we definitely encourage you to shy away from. We talked before about copying the plist between computers as a way of licensing. And this was something that worked, at least seemed to work, because the check that the application ran to ensure that it was actually correctly licensed was actually fairly random and fairly spaced out. So it didn't actually have a huge amount of, there weren't checks every 5 minutes, for example, that it was going to be actually licensed correctly. However, that has changed, and we have moved towards a process where that check happens on the application's launch. And so you will have an issue with those environments if you have any copying of plist between computers. Please use the VL serializer if you need to correct those deployments. And finally, another non-supported package, which I can't really understand why people would do, but ultimately using the updater packages and the builds, which we're calling combo builds here, for an initial install. And the reason for that is there are certain components of the install that are not included within the combos, such as Microsoft Auto Update. And as things move forward and release more and more builds in the 2016 roadmap, if you like, what will basically happen is we will assume that those parts of the software are actually installed and obviously write code against that assumption. And where you have a situation where that's not the case, we may find that you have performance issues and breakages and things like that. Now, in terms of configuration, the preference plist files aren't part of the app bundle, and so you can actually modify those to some degree. The best practice, according to our literature, is very much to modify a single plist file and then script and deploy that out to your user base or your devices. Again, we're looking at third-party applications primarily to fulfill this role, Casper, those kind of applications that we talked about before. So again, just at that point, does anybody have a question? Over here. Oh, okay, sorry. Do you want to just use the mic? Congrats on having a Mac, by the way. That's great.
So you mentioned, I don't know if this is on.
Yeah, I can hear you, yeah.
Okay, great. So you mentioned not copying the plist file, but then you're talking about the plist files there. Is it only the licensing plist file that you're saying don't
basically
copy?
Yeah,
but all the other ones are fair game.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Sorry, I should have made that clear.
I have a question about for this, and you might be getting into it later in the presentation. Is there a way to manage controls? On the Windows side, we do a fair amount of customization, and Office 2016 for Mac brings Mac Office far more into parity than previous versions. So one of the questions I'm getting from my leadership is, can we start applying those same policies now that it's looking a lot more like Office 2016? Is that possible?
It depends on what you're trying to do. What sort of policies did you have in mind?
We have we block PSTs, for example, and I know that's difficult because that's both an Office and a Windows setting for roaming. But there are things like that, or setting custom fonts as the default font boot up for every device upon installation. You should be able to do that with the custom 2011. It didn't work very well. So having some kind of policy control is always helpful. I know you're doing a lot of XML stuff. I just wasn't sure if that's coming out.
I'm actually going to defer over to my colleague here. You want to just introduce yourself for a second? Because I think that would be useful. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm on the Outlook for Mac team. And so I've been doing some sessions about Outlook for Mac, but I'm familiar with a lot of the deployment kind of background that's being presented here. So to speak to your question a little bit, because you mentioned PST, which is an Outlook, and custom fonts could be Outlook or other apps as well. A lot of that is done, via script, via plist. There's ways to customize, say, the font that what email, when you hit new email, which font should that be, if you don't want to have the default that's set when you deploy. So we don't have group policies, in the Mac platform. And so most of that is done via AppleScript or another way to set those plist values. Now AppleScript could open a whole new conversation, so I want to keep it going. But you can speak to me after, and we could talk a little bit more about AppleScript support and things like that. So,
all right.
Yeah. Great. Right. Plist template of all the options.
We can talk afterwards.
That might just be a no, so don't get your hopes up. Okay, great, thank you. So I'm not part of the Mac engineering team, so really helpful resource there. So I'm just going to continue on, and we're going to talk a little bit now about updating. And so we've really talked about the packages and install and deployment and a little bit about configuration. But now I'm going to talk a little bit about updates, and I feel uniquely underqualified to talk a bit about this when I've got someone from the actual team in the room. But ultimately, I thought it might be interesting just to talk a little bit about the engineering approach. So ultimately, there is normal development, new features and fixes until the last Sunday of the month, and please tell me if any of this has changed, by the way, at which point the code is forked off, and then they then go into a phase of validating and stabilizing that particular code set, which will obviously be the next build. That build is then ultimately pushed 7 days after that to the Insider program. And I don't know if anybody's here is using the Insider program at all. So the Insider program, I hope so. We'll be pushing that a little bit more. But ultimately, the Insider program is, as it sounds, early. 1 week early access to the builds that are going to be pushed out as final finished builds. And so the actual, after the 14 days after, we then release that final build. And the release cycle is ultimately on a monthly basis and roughly the second week of every month, not always on Patch Tuesday. I know Microsoft have had this Patch Tuesday thing going for a while, but ultimately if you don't see something there, it's probably a day late, or perhaps we haven't been able to get Apple to sign off on the release of that in time. But it's roughly around that sort of cadence. And really, this kind of goes down to come back to the point I made right at the beginning of this, which is the move away from perpetual releases of large jumps of functionality up to these monthly build cadences where Microsoft Auto Update will automatically keep your environment subscribed and up to date with the latest builds. Now, one of the things that's important to understand as well from here is there's really only two different ways to update. You can either do it yourself or let the Microsoft Auto Update do it for you. Once you do it yourself, you're obviously taking on all that responsibility, but it gives you that ability to do some of the stuff we've talked about today in terms of, pushing that out and configuring it and managing it. And in terms of staying up to date, really we have recently changed a little bit around the builds that are actually available. So you may remember I spoke a little bit about using a combo build as an initial install and why that was a bit of a no-no. Well, the idea of a combo build is really to be a cumulative update of all the builds that went before it. So if you do get out of step and you miss a month or 2 months or 3 months, you can deploy the combo build and that will basically take you back up to supportability, including the features and functionality that you would have missed before. But those combo builds can still be quite large because obviously they're still pulling in a lot of functionality there, especially depending on how long it's been since you last updated your build. So we've moved to this concept of having a delta build. And as things stand at the moment, these delta builds are N-1. So basically, they can only be used if you're updating from January to February, February to March, etc. But as you can see, the benefits of staying up to date are quite enormous in terms of the amount of saving the size of the package, basically, and the amount of bandwidth that you're going to consume to bring that down. There is talk within the team, I'm assured, that you know this is something that they're looking to expand out, but ultimately, you can't have delta builds that run for a huge amount of time because then they just become a combo build, right? They have to take on so many new features that they actually become useless for what they're doing. But ultimately, if you can stay up to date using the Microsoft Auto Updater or deploying it yourself, there are some real benefits in terms of the size of the builds that you're going to be deploying. And finally, I just wanted to, as if I haven't mentioned it enough, Microsoft Auto Update has gone through some changes a little bit recently. And it is something that's worked on quite a lot by the engineering team, as I said before, because it is it is required by us to really get, I suppose it's the benchmark of the way that we keep the service running. And as you know, it's kind of what we'd love to get to in the office group in Pro Plus, right? We'd love that everybody just got the builds for Windows every month. That would be great. This is something that is available, and as we've seen today in the room, you can support this without worries around app compatibility and things like that. So what's changed here a little bit in 2016 is the move to per app updates. Which basically means you can update an individual app rather than the whole suite. We're also supporting silent installs for users. So anything that makes sure that a user is not involved within the install process is always a good thing, because what do we want the users to be doing? Their job. We don't want them to be having to do anything else in terms of updating and managing this. In terms of better network support, what this really means is the ability to pause and resume downloads of the actual application itself, and that's something that's apparently been something that we've been asked by the administrators in the Mac community for some time. And custom channels really allows you to not only take the builds from our resources, but also take them from other locations that you've specified within your network as well. So you're able to target Microsoft Auto Update at different locations, and one of those locations is the Insider program. So we would recommend, and I'm sure we'd like to see this, that more of you at least have some of your Mac users on that Insider build, maybe from an IT perspective, so you can get a view of those new features before they actually come out. Obviously appropriately train and manage people in that way. So again, I'll just pause at that point just to ask if there are any questions around the way that we update the software. Oh, okay, great. Thank you for coming forward.
How is Microsoft going to start addressing rollout updates for multiple Macs? Right now, it's just a sneaker walk over to a machine to run the MAU. Is there something going to be coming out where administrators can actually set scheduled tasks to run, to have it downloaded? Because right now, my end users are non-admins. They got to put a service desk ticket in every time there's an update. And for me to go around to about 50 to 60 different Macs on 5 different locations is cumbersome to keep up with.
I understand. It's obviously your guys' team.
Is this one on over here? All right. Hello?
Yeah, you can hear me.
Yeah, so Definitely there are some improvements coming to auto update. The one of them that's already out, which is I think would really help what you just mentioned, is you don't get prompted for an admin to install, so you don't have to be an administrator. These Delta updaters that are coming, you know, they're less than 100 megs. When they come in, you can hit install, and they will just install. Something else that's coming down the line that I can show you is that, you know, we want to make that even easier. We don't even want you to have to say, you know, download now, check for updates, all that stuff. We want to download it in the background, and the next time you relaunch an Office for Mac app, it'll install the update, kind of like you might see with other apps out there. Just all you have to do is relaunch. The other thing is these updates are coming from our CDN. And so one of the other updates we've heard, you know, requests we've heard is, you know, we'd like it to come from our servers, right? We want to test out a build, make a package, and then use auto update not to come from, you know, Microsoft, but to actually come from us. So that's a way to, you know, use auto update in your organization, but and not have to use Casper to push out. So I can talk a little bit more about that offline, but we're definitely excited about some of the changes coming to MAU. It's kind of been a pretty basic app in the past. Just it looks at what's on the server in the CDN and looks at what's on your Mac and determines what's the update, and we have some new functionality coming, which is pretty exciting.
Okay, and where would you say is the best place to keep up to date with that kind of information being released?
So what we do, well, first off, the Insider program is the way you'll get the bits the fastest. And in auto update, that's how you enroll. So in auto update, there's actually a drop down. Well, first, there's a checkbox to enroll in Office Insider, and then there's a drop down to choose slow or fast. And the Insider Fast program is something we released just recently. We started doing it in June, where you get weekly updates. So monthly is too slow for us. We want to actually update Office weekly. And that's something where you know, you'll get these improvements not just to the Office for Mac apps, but actually to MAU itself. And then one of the things I'll point out is a great reference really is that Mac Admin Slack team. That's something that I'm a part of. We have lots of people on there. You get responses from people who work for Microsoft, but people who work on this stuff from around the world. And it's really a great community. And that's some of the things where we talk about MAU. We talk about volume licensing. We talk about different packages, all the things there. So, and then we have folks that are from the specific apps too. So I'm on there talking about Outlook, and we have folks from across the other Office for Mac apps and other Mac apps that are not Office, part of that family, like Skype and OneDrive and things like that. So.
Okay, so we're nearly at time. Thank you so much. We're nearly at time now. So yeah, just on the screen there, you'll have copies of these slides. It's always dangerous saying I will contact and connect you and put my own email up there. But actually, I am really passionate about improving our coverage of Mac expertise within the UK and obviously you know, across Europe as well. But more than happy to speak to anyone and put you in touch with the folks who can help you. Just a couple of things when we close. I know this is slightly off topic, but we do have an Office 365 Pro Plus booth down in the Expo Center. So if you want to go down and ask any questions around Office more generally, and Office for Mac as well. And also we have our particular Office track here at Ignite, where there's the session obviously that you've just had is on there, but also sessions on virtualization, which I went to yesterday, which obviously you'd have to get online now, but also sessions around things like System Center, which we haven't really talked about today in terms of using that as a deployment method. Final thing I'll mention just before I close off is please fill out your evaluation. This is particularly important to myself, this being the first time I've presented at Ignite. Hopefully you couldn't tell. So really would appreciate that very much. And thanks for your time. Thank you.